Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Dash American, where we bring people from all different kinds of cultural backgrounds and people who have different relationships with their cultural background to come together and share their stories. My name is Peyton Emery, and I'm honored to welcome guest James Barbosa, individuals who are American veterans. Why don't you introduce yourself and talk about your name, your cultural identity, and what branch of the military you were in?
All right, so my name is James Barbosa, as Peyton mentioned. James is from Colombia. It's pronounced James in Colombia, but it's spelled J-A-M-E-S. So James is what I get a lot, but I correct people all the time. As I say, cultural identity, I was born in the U.S. I'm American. All I know is everything here in America, but however, I was raised in a very ethnic Colombian neighborhood. So I was able to, interact with my mother's culture, and I adapted as mine as well. The branch I served was the Army, United States Army, baby.
All right. So why don't we start off with the why, the moment or moments of your life that led you to decide why you wanted to serve the country in such a courageous way?
I think I was about 23 years old during the time frame. It was 2008, and I just got laid off of my, I was working at a power plant, and because of the economical crash, they were laying a lot of people off. I was one of those people. You know, it was kind of like work perfect timing because I didn't really like what I did, and I wanted to pursue a different career. And I always thought, you know, I'm a people person. You know, let me try to become a police officer. That was very well prestigious occupation in the city I was raised in. So I had two options: either join the military or go to college. And I was not so confident in college, so I was like, let me join the military and get this experience, and it will be relevant to, helping the community. But in this case, I would be helping my country first and then coming back and serving my community locally. That's when we joined first.
So in terms of the experience, how is being a person of color in an environment that the general public assumes is a heavily white space? Was there any sense of alienation, or is that a misconception?
So that's a very good question. So let me break it down. From my experience as a veteran, and my experience in the Army in particular, I served as an infantryman. Infantryman is about, I want to say, 80-85% white, maybe 5-7% Latino, maybe up to 10, and the rest is people darker than me, so black, Asian, anything within those realms. Being a heavily white space, I was kind of blinded from the sense of colorism, because I adapted to my environment, and that environment basically is very white annotated in the sense, you know, racial jokes were highly made, and it became a norm. We didn't take offense to it. I would hear the N-word, I would hear spick, I would hear white trash, and it was all with love, so I didn't really took offense to that. However, when I was transitioning out, I started seeing a difference. When I was in, I really didn't see a difference between color. When I got out, that's when I started seeing a difference within color. I would notice more the occupations. If there were cooks, they were predominantly black. If there were whites, they were predominantly, you know, infantry, ground troops, officers, you know, positions of power. And I didn't really notice that, even though I advocate that the military has a different, better model than the United States of America in the sense of equality. I think there's more equality and equity inside the military than there is outside the military. But there is a lot of differences, and there is still racial boundaries that have to be overcome. More so now that I'm out and I see it everyday life, you know, just for the simple fact that even myself, I'm not seen as an American. And that kind of sucks because I was born here, raised here. I learned English and Spanish here. I served, I fought here, I fought in the infantry. And that's a very prestigious and honorable occupation. So to me, I'm very well American. But yet, I don't feel that I get treated as one. I don't at all.
So I think it's really interesting, just like one of the earlier points that you made, you talked about how in the military, surrounded by your fellow soldiers, you didn't feel necessarily a difference, you didn't feel necessarily othered. But those, the materialization of othering definitely existed in the slurs that were being thrown around. So it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, but the identity of being a soldier was put before anything else.
Absolutely, 100%. So, and that's why I didn't feel it there. While I was in uniform, we're all in uniform, so we saw rank before we saw color. And that's what united us. And despite our political views or our racial views or whatever environment we grew up in, that kind of went to the side. That had to be pushed to the side because we got treated as equal. And that's why I said the equity is there. You know, if you have a higher rank, despite the color, you know, you're gonna submit and you're gonna be subordinate to those commands. So that racial crap is out the window in this specific moment. Once the uniform's off, it's fair game. What is fair game? Meaning that we can easily transition back into the environments that we grew up as. And if you grew up in a predominantly white society and not affiliated yourself with color, then you might act in ways that can be racist and unconscious racist and offensive to other people and totally be okay with that. What the military did was educate that in some occasions. I bonded with majority of my friends, you know, infantrymen were white and Latino, but we had a bond and that really didn't matter. You know, we were strong. They're still my brothers. And I love them to that, despite their political views, despite their racial views as well. Even if they love Trump or whatever, that doesn't change how I feel towards them. You know, we share our bondage. However, you know, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. You know, is there a difference? Yes, 100%. There is a difference. When you're a soldier, you're a soldier. But when I don't have that uniform on, it's how people view me, the perception of they do. You know, if I get pulled over by a police officer, when they find out I'm a veteran, they let me go. Other veterans may not agree with us. Other veterans might say that that's a false, that's not true. There is no racial boundaries. And they are entitled to say that, and that's fair for them to say. However, I think when they do say that, you know, I don't think they come from environments that were diverse in color. You know, I feel like they come from more of a white space, and they're saying that in a sense of, what are you talking about? You know, where there is no privileges here. White privilege is a common word now, and they don't believe in that. And, well, obviously, I believe in it because I've been on both sides. You know, white people don't have to live with colored people. They don't. They don't have to live in urban society. They don't. And when they do, it's mostly, you know, ethnic cleansing, what I see, gentrification, what I see. They don't want it to embrace the culture of that necessary environment because they think they're bringing something good versus not seeing the good that's already there because it's always stereotyped as inferior or bad or ugly or the perception is bad and negative. You know, mostly where we occupy spaces as a minority, it's always has that negative connotation, and that's why education is so crucial, especially about the societies we grow up in. And I think that can bridge the gap and bridge the understanding of, hey, people of color are saying, especially veterans, yo, shit is still fucked up. Despite that we serve, there's still a big difference. There's still a big difference between us. You have fair skin, I don't. When people look at an American, they're looking at you first before they look at anybody else. That's a problem.
That's so interesting. And I remember you saying that you, when you decided to go into the military, you had two choices. You had that or you had college. Did you feel like, or have you heard of any of your fellow veterans that their choice to go into the military, was that forced onto them? Did it feel like it was this or nothing? But I'm sure very many POC have that feeling.
I think a lot of, let's separate the communities. You know, historically, whites that join come from suburban communities. Latinos and blacks and Asians and Native Americans come from urban and basically poor communities. Not all the time, but let's use the majority for that sake. So from what I've seen, a lot of the people of color, people that look like me or have my ethnicity or speak the language that I do, they join not to serve their country. They join to find an outlet so they can find upward mobility versus the narrative of a person who grew up in the suburbs will join to serve their country, to fight for this country. Now, you get a little bit of everything, obviously, from the urbans. I want to fight for America, and that's fine, too. But from what I've seen, my interactions with the people from Puerto Rico, from, you know, from urban society, they joined for upward mobility versus they joined to fight for the country. So there's two different mindsets going in there. Me, as I told you before, I joined to get upward mobility, to qualify to become a police officer. So my intention, yes, I didn't know how important or what I was getting myself into when I signed, but I was able to assimilate. But those were my decisions, some people would argue that that's not like that for everyone, and that's fine. But from my experience, that's what I saw.
And so I think the term upward mobility and mobility in general is incredibly important, especially when talking about the military, especially the U.S. military. Did you find that, I mean, I guess you did say it, that many of your POC, like fellow soldiers, did come from a place of trying to find that versus trying to serve their country. So did you find a stronger bond with them, kind of like an unspoken social contract that you guys just kind of knew? Did you guys feel othered in terms
exactly what you're saying. And I would have to answer no. Because of the rank system, that kind of bonded you with a person despite their color. So that gap wasn't really necessary there. If my fellow soldier is white, and I'm the only Latino, they're listening to reggaeton, they're listening to salsa bachata, they're going to clubs with me, they're open to it because we're so connected and we're doing the same job. There is no favoritism in that sense, even though favoritism does exist. But no, we don't be like, yeah, you know, there's a person of color. Hey, what's up, bro? How you been? Yes, they're to a certain degree, but not all the time because how it's structured, you're committed to the people that is in your surrounding. So those are your family, those are your brothers, and I think anybody, despite their color, will agree to that. If you serve, these are my people, these are who I'm serving with, these are who I'm with. And I say that more because I was an infantryman. I can't speak for other jobs that is mixed with both genders, so I have no idea. I can't speak to that, but I can speak to the combat units. And I think because there's a brotherhood, and it was 100% predominantly male, not so much that exists today. You know, women are allowed in the infantry now and in combat units. But I guess that's why that wasn't really, I wasn't, even though I was looking for my brother, I know what you were asking, or hey, you're black, or you're Latino, hey, or you're Asian, now let's link up together. Mm-hmm. I think the initial part did want to come out like that, but since it's already embedded that we're all the same rank, we're privates, specialists, etc., you're the bottom of the barrel, you're going to submit to the sergeant that is giving you the orders. That kind of starts jettisoning. I don't know if I said it right. It starts dumping, basically. It starts removing itself little by little. However, here in college, I get that more. I feel that more here, especially in NYU. I'm like, oh man, you're a person of color. I look at you and I'm like, what kind are you?
It's like a soft whisper, yeah, like, no one else can hear.
Are we the same? Here, yes, more so than the military. So to tell you the different dynamics, here I feel it more, 100% more, versus there, not so much. Even though they kind of exist, quote unquote, but no. You know, NYU, yes, I'm looking for people like you guys, 100%, versus people. When I was in the Army, I wasn't really, oh, another one? Oh, these are my brothers,
right?
Period. These are the people I'm serving with. These are the people I'm deploying with. These are the people I'm training with. These are my people. And if it's a group of people of color or whatever, I don't care. This is, you know, you kind of embrace your surroundings as family.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So you touched on it a little bit, but I just want to ask, after your service, is there an experience that sticks out that you find that your white peers don't experience or don't seem to understand? White peers in terms of like your fellow white veterans?
Being educated in society, there is a difference. You know, whiteness is more promoted, you know, as American, and being a Latino, being black, being other, doesn't really qualify you as being an American. If I don't wear my veteran hat, people will treat me differently compared to when I do wear it. I see the difference, and that kind of sucks because it shouldn't be like that. So there is friction, there is conversation. I try not to get into a big argument about it. I just try to say my opinion, listen to theirs. I completely understand theirs, 100%. I just hope they understand mine. And that's all I'm looking for. You don't have to agree with everything I say, but as I can understand yours and where they're coming from, and hoping that this country is serves as a, you know, equal equity, that's not true, or be equal in race, that's not true, or equal in gender, which is not true. They say it is, but I can understand why they say that. Can you understand why I'm saying that? Or I'm just bitching, crying, being lazy, you know, is it the culture that I'm coming from? Is it, you know, they blame so much things, and I don't think they understand because they haven't been surrounded by, you know, they haven't lived in urban societies because they don't want to give it a chance. And I think that's where a lot of misunderstanding comes in. As I live in an urban community, and what some people would say is dangerous. I go there, my neighbors are people of color, Asian, Black, and Latino, and I've never been robbed. I've never been approached in a negative way. Everybody says hi to me. I say hi to everybody. If anything, there's a lot of more. I get shown a lot of more hospitality and love there. But if a white person was to go there, they probably wouldn't have that same perception. They would have to go, stay, be okay with it, and maybe they will understand it later on that there is good people within the demonized perception of certain environments, which are filled with people of color.
All right, another topic that I want to possibly end on. In terms of the discussion of veteran neglect, or I wouldn't want to say erasure, but just kind of like a glossing over, like wrapping it up in like a nice bow, just the experience of veterans. Do you ever feel that your actual experience is not being properly represented, or that you yourself as a veteran is not being properly represented?
Is there neglect? Yes. How much of it depends where you're at, depends how informed you are about your benefits. The Department of Veteran Affairs does a good job here in New York City. Some maybe would argue no, it's a piece of shit. You hear that a lot. I like it more here in New York City, going to the Veterans Hospital. It's a different dynamic, it's a different hospitality, it's a different, you know. So I can see how some veterans will feel neglected in certain areas. And I also think that, going back to the Veterans Department of Veteran Affairs, I think a lot of it, because it's so many veterans coming in and trying to access services, a lot of the times they fall into the pits of getting a Band-Aid instead of going deep into the root of the real problems. In addition to, a lot of veterans don't want to disclose a lot of the wounds that they have internally, emotional trauma that they suffer. So yes, with the Department of Veteran Affairs, to a certain degree, yes. But there's a lot of resources out there. For example, I go to therapy with an organization called Headstrong, and they're a nonprofit, and they give me free therapy. In addition, there's NYU Langone that also does free therapy for anybody who served. So there is outlets. It's just, how can you access that? Who has that information? Do you want to get that information? So it's on the person. Me, I'm the one that, you know, took initiative. I was surrounded by information, and I saw the benefits that that I had, and that's why I ran with it. And I grabbed it, and I'm like, well, you know, when I wasn't doing so good, I needed to seek help, and I grabbed it, and I went to NYU Langone. When that session finished, they brought me to Headstrong, and Headstrong I have forever. Until God takes me from this world, I get free therapy, and that's a good thing, because you don't know how beneficial it does. And I believe, I'm big into mental health, and I'm big that everybody should get therapy, every single person that's on this earth, because we have endured some type of trauma.
All right, so before you go, do you have any last minute notes that you want our listeners to know, maybe in regards to the biggest lesson you've learned in service, or a perspective about being a veteran that you want to make sure that the listeners get introduced to?
Don't never let your mind limit you. You know, don't let fear limit you. Don't let people limit you. Surround yourself by positive people. Surround yourself by positive books, things that's going to reinforce your mental state, because your mind's the one that helps you push through all the activities you have on a daily basis. So if you want to become a doctor, lawyer, president, artist, work for The Daily Show as a correspondent like myself, you know, write that down and pursue it. Push. Keep knocking on that door until they open. When you throw enough shit on the wall, something's going to stick. So just keep throwing that shit on the wall. Something's going to stick. That's what I'll leave you guys with. Thank you so much for having me here.
I'm so excited.
I am so happy I'm able to share my experiences, my stories.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much, Thomas, for being here. And thank you guys for coming out to chat with us. I think that this is a perspective that is many times looked over. And I have nothing but newfound respect on top of what was already here. Thank you so much for coming onto the show today, Thomas. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to this episode of Dash American and listening to our stories. We encourage a continual discussion about culture and identity. So share, subscribe, and feel free to give any feedback you may have about it on our website, whether you agree or disagree with what was said here. Thank you guys, and see you again for another episode of Dash American.